When you were my director, when you were doing the countdown, it reminded me of something that happened on a plane once. I used to travel with a choir of about 50 black people. And I remember once we was on our way to sing somewhere, we was on the plane. And you know how the flight attendant go through that thing? She tell you to do things. And everything she said, everybody in the choir stood up in the plane and did what she was doing. And the lady tripped out, man. It scared her. But welcome to the program. I'm Jesse Peterson. Today we're talking about bond. This is a part three of it. We're celebrating our fifth year anniversary. And I cannot believe 5 years went by that quickly. It just blew my mind. It was some rough times, but I'm better for it today. I remember up until I was 37, I used to cry at every situation. I would cry like a woman in a minute. If it got hard, I would boo-hoo. Just cry. I was so emotional. But I've been able to endure this stuff. I haven't shared any tears at all, and that's really something else, huh? But for some reason, I changed from that. I'm glad about it. And so what we're talking about today, if you missed last week and the week before, just call the TV station. They'll replay it for you. I'm introducing you to some of the people on bond and to give you an idea of their impression of us and what we're doing. And last week we stopped off with Greg. And I want to know from Greg, how did he hear about bond and what is his impression of bond?
Well, I first found out about bond through Mr. Walker, a gentleman you had on your show last week. And he told me that there was an organization that really had some positive ideas, some ideas that weren't generally thought of in the quote-unquote mainstream, but some ideas that would encompass those individuals who wanted to do something with their life. And, you know, as you know, Jesse, I'm a detective for one of the major law enforcement agencies here in the area, and I was a skeptic.
That's right. So why'd you... I'm safe.
and for real, I was a real skeptic. And in my position, I find that a lot of the criminals, particularly the males, when you go in to interview them, there's one thing that runs inherent in most of them. They can readily name their mother, or grandmother, or the people that they know, but oftentimes the father is absent from the home,
yeah. And
they don't have that strong image. And I was taken aback. You mentioned crying. I don't know if you recall this, but I came to one of your banquets, and there was a young man who got up to speak just before I was asked to get up and speak. And he was telling the audience how he changed his life and how he turned himself around. And I just remember that night because I could not finish the speech.
Oh, yeah.
I was just overcome with emotion because all I see is the negative. A lot of times all I see is a negative, particularly out of young men, 16, 17-year-old. And this kid really overwhelmed me. And from that point on, I saw that Bond was a viable organization, one that had a definite impact, and one somewhat like a barometer where you can get a reading and a measurement of what it has accomplished. And then sitting here this evening on the panel with these gentlemen here, the gentlemen from Oregon and Alabama, two young men who also overcame some very debilitating situations within their own life. Because
yeah.
The ability to express yourself and to convey a thought is really a gift. You know, if you can get an idea across and you can get people to come to your way of thinking, it's really a gift. And for you, my hat goes off to both of you gentlemen, particularly you, because you really seemed that it was a problem for you and that you took some constructive steps to correct that. And if that is what you've gathered out of this organization, then it's definitely one that should be around and something that we all should support.
Absolutely. You know, I want to say that kind of crying is okay.
Okay. You know. All right, I feel better now.
Sometimes when I see young people overcoming their problems and I see that they understand what is happening and they're dealing with life in a good way, I tell you, I had to hold back sometimes. I mean, it blesses my socks off. So that's okay. I used to cry because life was hard, you know. Someone would look at me wrong. Oh, why they treat me that way? You know, that kind of stuff. But
well, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting. Again, we spoke earlier about this machismo and this macho thing that we sometimes insulate ourselves with as men. And I think that crying, because I tell you, I cry at movies sometimes. I go to a good movie and it's just something about a character or a friendship that really catches me off guard. because you would like to have that type of experience in your own life. Oftentimes, it's difficult to establish those kind of relationships. But when I see something like that, I am really moved by it, you know. And so,
but don't cry in front of a woman.
No, I don't know. I think it's important that we get in touch with our emotions. And part of being a man is being able to express all your emotions without any type of reservation.
His beep is going off.
It's my watch.
Oh, your watch.
It's time for me to speak.
Oh, okay. Francisco, your impression
Francisco
of Bond.
Martinez.
Funny. He have a Mexican last name. Isn't that funny?
I'm Hispanic. I'm African Hispanic.
Wow. That's scary, huh?
Scary. We might come over and get you.
We're all over.
Speaking to the mic, and your impression of Bond.
My impression of Bond is very positive. It's the first time I've seen a black organization. I think I heard you once on the Putman program here in Los Angeles, and I was impressed. I heard you speak, and I heard you have a speech impediment, and you were speaking beyond your ability to communicate.
Yeah.
And it really amazed me, and it impressed me, and so I...
Oh, that's nice.
So when I heard
you... That's why I want people to know that if we were to lay down our ego life, whatever we call it, we were talking about this earlier, we were trying to solve our own life, we were trying to give a certain impression so we could look good before the world, and just messing up everything. If we were to lay that down, miracles can happen, man.
Absolutely.
I don't know English that well. And here I am doing a radio talk show, talking to you guys, and I don't speak well. That's from him. It's not on myself.
It's way beyond you.
That's right. And we all can have it. That's the thing about it.
Answering the question
speaking
that you,
to the microphone.
Answering the question you talked about, male machismo, the facade of toughness, it's usually taken away by a father not being in the home,
let me just
angry at the
you.
Woman.
He's jumping up and down. We don't want to give him a heart attack. He tried to get this thing right.
Okay.
This mic is the kind that you sort of have to speak right into.
Put it right in my mouth. How's that?
Twist it up a little bit.
How's that?
Yes, sir. And speak into it. Hold it close to your lips. You're about to kiss, but not quite.
I can't kiss this thing.
All right.
Okay.
That's a beautiful black woman with gold hair.
She's poison to
with
me.
With silver hair. Go ahead.
Okay. Answering the question about the male machismo, the reason it's there is that it's lost in the black family.
Yeah.
And in anger, the angry youth usually comes out and puts the toughness facade on to make up the difference, to make up for the loss. But he's really weak inside.
Absolutely.
And it's the emotion comes out in anger for young men. And so that's why you see that in the community today. And so
one thing I like about life, once you find yourself or find him, you don't have to put up a front at all. You just be yourself. And most of the time, it's not like everybody else. I've always wanted to be myself. But up until the last 6 years or so, I wasn't able to do it. But I've always wanted to have my own identity, to do my own thing, whatever God intended for me to be like, whatever personality he wanted me to have, that's what I wanted. And he's given it to me, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been able to see people, and on their toughness, I could read them and tell them what kind of parents they had,
yeah.
You know, what kind of upbringing they had. It's all they were trying to make up for some kind of a loss,
yeah.
You know.
I can look at them, too. I see those tough guys sometimes. I say, he's gay. He's on drugs. He hates his wife because he's faking it too much. It's just unreal. You don't have to do it. You need to relax and get on with life. Just relax.
You know, I was just going to say also, sometimes the guys really are tough guys. And see, you can be tough for so long until finally you become that thing. And so I'm not saying that there isn't, and that there isn't a place for machismo. There is. We definitely have roles as men and women. But it's just when it's off balance, when it's off kilter, when one side of the personality dominates and takes over, because we wouldn't want to feminize men. I don't want to say that.
We're trying to help them overcome.
We're trying to help them overcome this feminization that has been taking place.
Yeah.
So I want to clarify that point. I don't see anything wrong with a certain degree of machismo, but it's the acting part of it. I mean, if you are a man, you will be a man. It's not an act. It's not a facade. It's not something that you have to pretend to be. It's just the same with a woman. A woman will be a woman, whatever that is. And it doesn't take an acting course or some other method. It will be.
Let's go on this side real quickly. Martin Francis is on our advisory board, and he's a very interesting person. I like talking to Martin. Very interesting, Martin.
Yes, and I brought something interesting back with me. Check it out. Poison oak.
Oh, thanks, man. I thought it was something else there for a minute.
No, I'm not a I'm not a single white gay male with AIDS. This is certifiably poison oak.
Martin, what is your impression of Bond, and what have you gotten from it?
Well, the opportunity to be corrected. I stumbled into Bond thinking I would contribute something, and I actually was corrected by Jesse. I thought I was saying something wise and smart, and I was all emotional in saying it, and he pointed that out, and it rocked my boat, and I could see that I was just a woman inside with all kind of emotions and everything. I related to my mother, and
they got the cameraman going,
repressed.
Oh my goodness.
I was very repressed.
He didn't understand what you meant by woman.
I was repressed. Well, I had all these emotions is what I mean. And it's not good for a man to relate to his emotions. It's best if he sees that that just feeds his ego. And, yes, it's best if he sees it.
Martin.
Is
okay.
That close
enough?
Hey,
yeah, you come back. Okay.
It's best if it
he
just
wants you to speak into the mic.
If it just – I can see it's just feeding – my anger is feeding my false personality.
Yeah.
And my anger is making me all emotional and crazy and crying and all that kind of stuff like you talk about. And I could see that, and it helped me become freer. And that's what I've got out of Bond.
Good, man. You know, it's so simple to overcome.
Yeah.
All you have to do is just stop hating your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't hate what's happening to you in life, you can overcome it just like that. At the twinkling of an eye, it is over. But most people, they say they forgive, and as soon as something else come along, they hate that situation.
Yeah.
As soon as someone at their job say something nasty about them, they hate that employee. Or they hate every situation, but yet they say that they are forgiven, and they are not. Because once you truly forgive, it is impossible to hate again. Because what happened is you wake up to reality. You can now see the world of evil and the world of good. And by good showing you evil, when it's coming at you, you're able to resist it. But when you hate, you only see one reality, that of evil, and you never can overcome it. But people, they love to hate. They just hate everybody. They hate every situation. I don't hate my situation.
It becomes a habit.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way at right. all if they really want to overcome it. Judy.
Yes.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, too.
Yeah. Your impression of Bond and
Well, actually, you know, I haven't really come to any of the Bond meetings or anything too right. often, but my impression of this organization is that it could only be something that could be positive, because I see that you have a person here, yourself, Jesse, a person with a real good spirit, you know, a real good attitude, and you're just real simple for me. It's like I can't talk to people who are too complicated, you know, complicated people in my life, you know, I they're just like over my head, you know, and I can only carry a conversation with people really that are very simple. And I don't know, I love that about your nature, and I think that is a good example to any kind of nationality.
That's
you know,
right.
any kind of nationality could see that nature and say, God, you know, that's a real nice person there, and recognize that person by their heart. And I've always been that way since I was a young girl, that I could see, thank God, I was able to realize, you know, good people from not good people.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that I think you have to be able to recognize, you know, your enemies, and know that, you know, that your enemies, like you said, if you can not hate. Right now, I'm a little bit emotional inside because certain things in my life are happening to me.
Are we coming to a break or the end? A break.
Oh, a
okay.
break.
Will you hold that thought? We'll take a break and come back in a moment.
Okay.
It's electric!
Bond, the brotherhood organization of a new destiny. Rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man. Call us toll-free, 1-800-411-BOND. That's 1-800-411-BOND.
Okay, we are back, and we're talking about Bond. Judy, you wanted to finish up a statement you were making.
I just wanted to say that it's very nice to be around an organization that is trying to deal with the emotions that we all have. And I realize that, you know, I'm not alone with this. I see that there are other people that have these emotions that are in their minds, and we think that, you know, just if we could worry about things, we can make everything all better, but it's not true. And I know that I'm dealing with that in my stuff in my mind right now, that I felt like everything, you know, was fine in my life, but until I'm having to actually deal with an evil or maybe a not good, so good situations come up, I'm realizing that, you know, it's like, where's my faith? I thought I had faith, and it's like, gosh, it's just disappearing. So there's a lot of this that I see that you are bringing up in your organization, and I think it's very good for people to talk about this and to bring these issues up, because no one does talk about it.
Yeah.
You get all kinds of baloney on television and radio, and you know, these are real down to earth issues that I think people would really enjoy hearing about and realize that that's me, you know, that's what I have to deal with every day.
Well, one thing for sure, you cannot work it out of your mind. It's totally impossible. You can come up with solutions in your mind, but it's going to only create other problems. It will look like for a moment that you have solved that problem, but you really haven't. You just created another problem. You have to keep going back. And so that's what I mean by not trying to work out your own life. You don't have to do it. You just need to know that you can't, and then He would take care of it. God would take care of it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's good. David wanted to come in on something that Rhonda said earlier, and then we're going to go to Charles over here.
Yes. I'll just make this real quick. In my life, I was always yearning for my father to take control of when I was growing up. And with my mother always butting in, always trying to take control, I only found, like, resentment because I couldn't find it was like she'd have all these reasons why I should do this, why I should do that, and so forth. But instead of helping me, it was driving me crazy, and I just resented her. And I was just sort of like waiting for my father to take over.
Yeah.
And it's good that you're doing what you're doing, letting your husband take over, because otherwise your son, like me, would probably end up resenting you, and it would drive him crazy.
I think that's a good point. I think that a lot of people don't realize that kids yearn for their father. There is something inside of our soul that causes us to yearn for him after a while. And when the father's not doing it, and leaves this to his wife, because again, if the man was strong, the woman wouldn't do it. But when he's not doing that, he's setting his kids up, both male and female, to go through what we all have had to go through in life. We yearn for our father. We want him.
And I was going to say, I can just see that I can make my son just like my brother is. He resented my mother coming up because there was no father in the home. And I can see I have the capacity to make my children just like my sisters and brothers were. And I don't want to do that.
How old is your son now?
He's 14.
Yeah, Wayne, that's his name. He called me up sometimes.
Yes.
She won't stop. She won't leave me alone.
Yeah. I'm saying the same thing on the other end. He won't stop.
She won't. Well, if he did this, I would stop. But then leave him alone, and then he would do what he needs to do. He's 14 years old, you know. He doesn't want that. Charles, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to make a comment on that, most of the anger in the black community, the angry black males, comes from overbearing mothers and young boys not having a man in the house to raise them properly, and so
that's right. That's why most of them are marrying white women now,
out of anger,
because they can't
out of rebelliousness,
and especially nowadays because this generation of black women are all men,
very hostile,
that's
angry,
right. Very much so, and the male, he doesn't have that nature to deal with it. He just to hell with it. I'm going to go.
Can't compete.
Yeah, you can't. That's
sad. They're tougher.
You can't, but it's sad. Charles, has been with us from day one, right?
Right, day one.
Day one, man. That's nice. 5 years. You should get a pen.
Yeah.
Here.
I want
gold.
That's
great.
Yeah, I heard a bond 5 years ago through my brother, Malcolm Jones, who's the vice president.
Yeah.
And he told me that some guy was going to get a bunch of black men together and going to meet and do something positive. I had to drive down from Bakersfield to see that. So the first few meetings were quite interesting, and I've watched Jesse through the years and watched him grow and get stronger and both physically and spiritually, and of course he gains some weight too.
Thank you, Charles. I'm going to the gym now.
But anyway, Bond has reminded me to check my emotions. I grew up. My mother was very emotional growing up, and so I had a lot of her identity inside of me, and so I just had to check my own self. And Bond, you know, as Doyle was saying, well, I guess I'll say last week, Mr. Doyle, who has his own business, he was saying the results, you know, when you look at an organization, you don't look at the glamour and the glitter and all that, you look at the final results.
That's right.
And you see results here, and that's what I appreciate.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, let's give it to her. You just reminded me. I remember when I first started Bond, I didn't know. It was just me. I didn't know anyone, nobody, anybody, however you say it. I didn't know. When I called that meeting, I knew no one. And I tell you, they put me through hell. And they challenged me. They talked about me. I used to go home, and I would say, I'm not going back. There is no way I'm going to go back. But I couldn't. I couldn't help myself. I would end up going back and keep going back. But it was a major challenge for me. There were many times I wanted to say, to hell with this. But I was compelled to do it. I couldn't. My nature had changed, and I knew what the problem was, and I wanted to help people to overcome it. I absolutely could not help myself. They used to be talking about me in the parking lot. They had, gather around, a whole group of the guys gather around and talk. And I knew they were talking about me, right? And I would, be leaving out, driving out, and I had to grin and bear, you know. Bye! You know, but I would say, black. But I had to endure. I had to endure. I thank God today for it. I really do. I'm better off for it today. Yes, ma'am. I can't even. I'm trying to think of your first name.
Maravich.
Maravich.
Yes.
What's your impression of mine?
It's great. I appreciate it because you speak the truth, and you don't cater to people in their emotional ways. Because I know I've probably came to you wanting you to do things that I wanted you to do to help solve my problems, and I can see you didn't cater to that. So yeah. I was kind of upset at that. But I thank God that you did not,
yeah.
And I see that. And so it has helped me to see the truth and to finally come to grips with, I cannot do anything in life. I cannot.
Yeah.
Why worry? You know, why even try and think? I mean, just as I was sitting here, it was so awesome to see my thoughts going, okay, he's going to ask me this. Now say this. Now that, and I was just trying, as I was sitting here, I'm not going to think. I'm not going to even think about what to say. No. Because anything
happen.
From thoughts, and I can see it, is wrong.
You know, the thing I like about that,
yes,
I'm happy knowing that I don't have to be in control of my
yes.
life. If God is God, why not let him do it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's right.
He know, you know, why not let him run in my life?
Right.
So my biggest problem with you has finally ended.
Oh.
I am patient with my husband, and I don't, you know, I'm fulfilled with God within, and I just have to, you know, not do anything.
Good.
Absolutely. That's it.
You know, we have about 2 minutes left, so we're going to have to move.
Here.
And Chris would absolutely cut my throat and kill me. Chris has been with me from almost day one, right?
Yeah, pretty
day
much.
One. And Chris is now graduating from Berkeley this summer. And so, your impression of Bond and what are you doing and all that?
Well, I first met with Bond about 5 years ago. My mother and I, we were having problems more or less. My parents, they had divorced maybe 5 years prior to when I first came to Bond. And so it was just my mother and I dealing with each other. And it came a point in time, I guess, when I wanted to go ahead and just start doing my own thing, maybe going out a little more, just, you know, I guess doing maybe typical high school things. And my mother put up a great deal of resistance to that. And so at the same time, and there were a lot of times when I felt, I guess, suffocated. I felt like I couldn't escape. And I knew that, and something on the inside told me that, turning to drugs or the gangs or any other, I guess, external groups wasn't going to do it. But at the same time, I didn't enjoy how I was feeling on the inside. And a lot of times I would get really frustrated with her, and I just didn't know, because a lot of times she wouldn't listen to me. And she wouldn't, a lot of times, I felt like she was just turning me off completely.
Yeah. We're out of time. What are you doing right now?
Getting ready to graduate from Berkeley in May, and going to go ahead and hit the job for us.
Yeah. I want to say that if you want to know more about us, Jim is also a part here. Jim, I'm sorry I'm out of time. Your impression as we go out, Abon?
I just think you have a good thing going, and it will help the young people who want to get out and get on their own.
Absolutely. I want to say that we're open to all people, and feel free to get involved. Our phone number and address is on the display there. You'll be able to see it. I appreciate all of you guys. I tell you, it's like a family. Bye. Thanks.
Somewhere in the world today, men have got to stand up strong. Face the truth about themselves to understand what went wrong. I know we can find a way. I know we can find a way. I know we can find.
Oh, we are on. Oh, welcome to the program. I didn't know we were coming on. I have shirts in my mouth and everything. We are celebrating, and it's okay if I look silly, because we are celebrating the 5th anniversary of the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. The purpose is, what we're doing is rebuilding the black community by rebuilding the black man. We're changing that somewhat now to rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man, because all 99.9% of men are weak and out of it. They don't know how to deal with life. They don't know how to deal with the issues of life. They can't deal with their wives or whatever. They give into it. So we're trying to help them to understand and overcome it. We do have an entrepreneur program, a mentor program, all kind of other things which are secondary. I believe that if a person wake up, he or she can then take hold of their own life and go on and live. You don't really have to have anyone over you, but we are doing those things. So if you miss the last 3 program, just call in and we will replay it for you. So tonight we're just going to have some fun and celebrate. Tomorrow night we're having a dinner with the guest speaker, Dennis Prager, who is a national radio and TV talk show host. So we're going to have a lot of fun, and you're going to hear from some of the young people tomorrow night. You will be able to hear a little more about their lives. Let's have some fun tonight. I want to know, now who do I want to know it from? I'm going to ask Superman. Superman, what do you think about what do you think about the way society is going now? And do you think we need to change it, or is it okay the way it is?
It's definitely not okay. And you can take your pick of what community you want. You can talk about South Central. You could talk about Brentwood.
Yeah.
There's trouble everywhere.
What is the problem? I mean, when you say trouble, like, what do you mean?
Well, there's a million different things, but people. Can I give you one instance?
Sure.
I don't live in this community, but I fix up properties in South Central and sell them. Usually there's a story behind the property when I get a property, because they're usually lost through some kind of foreclosure or a bank takes over a property. But there's usually a tragedy that happens before that. Yeah. That leads to it. And we'll find these properties, and you'll see the story of the downfall of the owner and how he once had a family, he once had a beautiful situation, and he like maybe lost it all to drugs. At one time he had a supposedly a loving wife and family, and you'll look through the remnants or what are left in the house, and you'll see notices where he got in trouble at work and where he got fired from his job and he got his license suspended. And when these people are being evicted or whatever from the house, you'll see, like this house we're on right now, I saw 12 people leave this house, and half of them were what you call strawberries, these women that have sex for drugs.
Oh, yeah.
And
you heard it all, Chris.
Yeah. And it's like, but these are married guys, married man. And he had all these people living in this house, and it's like, but you've got the same thing happening on in Brentwood too. You've got same thing happening with OJ. It doesn't matter what money you've got, and there's a tragedy behind. There's a story behind all these tragedies, and that's what I see. That's what I see wherever I look.
That's why a lot of people want to blame our situations on the poor not having enough or something else. They think we need more programs, but I think it's due to a lack of character. I think that most people lack character, and that's why their lives fall apart from South Central to Brentwood or to Beverly Hills. They don't have character. They're having sex with everybody. They're lying. They're conniving. They're just doing everything that it takes to destroy a life as opposed to building it.
Right.
Yeah, they like character. I was just sitting here thinking while you were speaking. There were a time when I would have not liked you because you were white.
Yeah.
No other reason but because you were white. And my mind would just not even allow me to see you as I see you now. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that all that has changed in my life, because now that I know you, and I do know you, you're no different than this man right here or this black man. You're the same person, but I was so separated from white people by my own hatreds in my heart, but what I had heard from politicians and everybody telling us it's a white and black issue, and the white man won't let you make it, and that separated my life, man. It's kind of sad to know I wasted a lot of time and to see so many other people living that way too.
Yeah, and when a black person would look at me like that, it's like I can honestly look at you, Jessine. I can talk to you for a little while, and it's later on that I realize you're black.
Yeah.
And I've always been
that way. I
know
what you mean by that now, yeah.
I've always been that way, but I've had people, the way you used to be, look at me, and it would cause me to resent them when that person would look at me that way.
I think that we black people we don't have a trust for white people, most white people. So there's always that little distrust there. But it's all in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind control. We've been deceived. And so it's just always that little distrust there, and as a result we don't come together based on character and what we agree on. Mm-hmm. It's really screwed up, man. It's a bad situation. It's a very bad situation.
I want to make a point.
You like white people?
They're all the same.
What do you mean by
white
that?
People, black people?
We all look
people,
the same.
They all look the same to me. The color of the blood is.
Have you ever had that problem though? That I was talking, like you just think all white people are against you. You don't have quite.
I've never had that problem.
And why not?
I come from two different cultures. I was born in this country, first generation, and my father came into this country back in '59. And barely able to speak the language, and came into this country, and he taught us that it doesn't matter who you are or what you are, it's what you do, and everybody out there is just like you. And so I didn't grow up in the black community with the racial hostility that you see out
Good,
there.
Man. One thing I want to just clear up, everybody is not the same, though. I do want to say that there are some black people and white people I don't want any Mexicans and whatever I don't want anything to do with, because their lifestyle are different from mine, their beliefs are different. I don't believe that we should do abortions, and I don't believe that all that kind of stuff, so I wouldn't want to. They're not like me. I used to be like them, but they're not like me, so we're all not quite alike. There is a difference. Yes, sir.
Yes, I can say that I'm completely black as far as I know.
And, you are?
Pure black, 100%. All black.
Black
and black. And I've never felt that way. I wanted to say, as far as racism, it goes just the just the opposite way too. There's white people that really don't really want trust. You just spoke of it from a black perspective, but there's white people that really can't really trust, a black person. They just hold it back in the back of their mind, no matter how genuine they come over to them. And I think that it's some of it is from the religious, arena or perspective. You know, churches are basically racist.
What do you mean?
Because black people basically, herd together, seeking God, and white people basically herd together seeking God, and that's just the way it's just a natural inclination, for that to be.
I think the reason like that because white churches are boring, and black churches are real loud and
phony.
Singing, how they sing and shout, and then white people, oh, praise the Lord. But we get down. But so I think that has to do with a cultural kind of a thing.
However, yeah. Anytime a war breaks out or something, we all get very, very spiritual on the same, start, mood faking the same, perspective. And that, Martin Luther King, this is Black History Month, we reflect on. He was a very strange person to me in my coming up. I grew up in the 70s, and I was just being taught. People were very in the black community were very keen, aware, and just as I look back, I look at a lot of his principles and the things that he really really taught. It really don't really tally with the the perspective that many of the black leaders in the black community, even within the black church, I know, still being functional in the black church, there is a lot of just understood separatism and focus race, racism, basically from just being.
I think that a lot of those so-called leaders, as you just said, people like Jesse Jackson and the Maxine Waters and Diane Watsons and the Bill Clintons and all, they didn't understand Dr. King at all. They didn't understand what he meant. Dr. King was coming from a different place than they are coming from now, because if they understood it, they wouldn't get away from it. They would still be living that way. And then secondly, they would not set themselves up as your leader. They would know that a man should never have a leader over him. We have a leader within us, and we wouldn't have that. So they wouldn't allow themselves to be your leader.
I think that's, one thing King continued to say, content of character, individual, building character. He was always pushing, and individual, the human race. And that's basically even, during the Black History celebrations and stuff, that's not really focused on,
character.
Character. And this is Bond is the closest thing to that. Yeah. It's the only organization, not the NAACP and not the Black Caucus. The organization, Bond is the first organization in my 32 years that I've seen generated from the Black community that really focuses on character building.
Judy, what is character?
A good definition of character. In my own words, I think character is what makes a person, what a person stands for, what a person believes. And
but some people believe in the wrong things. I was listening to Gloria Allred today, and she believed firmly in abortion.
That's true.
So,
I like to say that a person can believe in good things and bad things, but still, even the fact that she believes in something gives her character. I'm afraid that if you stand for nothing, then you have no character. And I think a lot of us, don't know where we stand on issues. And as far as I'm concerned, I respect somebody who stands for something,
even if it's wrong.
Even if they're wrong, but they stand for something. Yeah. It's like, where do you believe? What? There's conviction in your heart, and I believe that Martin Luther King was a good man, and he had conviction in his heart, And I don't believe anybody should just be a leader. You know, we shouldn't make, you know, members of your organization shouldn't try to make you a leader.
That's right.
Because you have a good heart. Because you have a good heart and you want good things to happen for each person. But each person's got to take that strength that they have, they see that is good in themselves, and go with that and be courageous. And, you know, I'm able to speak a little bit more clearer now. Or you get a little nervous when you get in front of people and you get a microphone and there's a little nervousness. But once you get over that and you speak from your heart and you really, truly speak with conviction. And I really believe that in life, I think sometimes I wish we didn't have any problems and things could just be normal. And wish, you know, I have this hope in me that just wishes for things to just be normal in life.
But, you know, it can be in your life. It's not going to be normal in everybody's life because most people do not want it. They're not willing to give up doing wrong. I remember years ago I wanted to overcome my problem, but yet I didn't want to overcome it. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to stop having sex, but I didn't because I thought it was too good. You know, this is too good to let go of. Even though I was miserable doing it, I still wanted to let it go, but I couldn't let it go because I thought it was good. But now that it's gone, I realize I didn't lose it. I lost hell. It was pure hell. Because whenever a man has sex out of wedlock, he gives up his soul. He loses himself. And I realized that I was giving myself away. But now that I don't, I have power in my life. I feel good. I have high self-esteem. So a lot of people don't want to give up those things to develop their character. They feel like they're losing something. Mm-hmm. You guys understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody? Am I the only one with that? When we come back, I want to ask you a question, and then I'll let you make your statement. Back in a moment.
It's electric!
Bond, the brotherhood organization of a new destiny. Rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man. Call us toll-free, 1-800-411-BOND. That's 1-800-411-BOND.
Okay, we are back. We're talking about bond. We're talking about life. We're celebrating and just having a good time. Are you free?
What do you mean by free?
Then no, I guess not. Huh? What does it take to build character?
What does it take to build character?
Because most people don't know.
I think being responsible for your actions and what you have to do in life, and go ahead and do it. That builds a lot of character.
It does.
Instead of shying away from what you should do and then doing something you shouldn't do.
Give me an example of what you mean. Because liberals use that same word, responsible for your action. Give me an example of what you mean.
I'd say you have a job to do. You have to go to work in the morning. And you go and you do your job instead of making up an excuse for not going. You know, like if you feel a little bad that day or something, you go anyway, and you take responsibility for your life.
Is it hard to be a man?
It's hard to be a man.
I hear some men say it's hard to be a man. He has a great responsibility. Is it hard for you to be a man?
Never really thought about it.
You haven't? Is it hard for anybody here to be a man?
Me.
It is hard? It's hard for you to be a man? Why do you keep trying?
I'm getting over it.
It is?
Yeah. Well, the only reason why I said that is because I grew up mostly my father wasn't there, and I had no idea what that was supposed to be. So, you know, I was thinking that life shouldn't be that hard. Life just shouldn't be this hard. And I grew up thinking that life shouldn't be hard. And, you know, as a result of starting to deal with life a little bit, it's like it's hard for everybody. You know, life has never started off easy. Why should you be any different from anybody else? But not growing up and being taught that all the time, it seemed like so much more to be doing. And it's simply just taking care of yourself and your own responsibilities. But I hadn't had to do that before.
Are you doing it now?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I have no choice. If I don't work, I don't eat.
I'm glad you don't have a choice. Yes, ma'am. Let me ask this real quick. You know, the welfare issue is a big issue now. A lot of people are talking about taking it away and making a change. I want to ask David and Chris, what should we do about welfare?
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
What is the big benefit of welfare? What is it that it's supposed to...
Nothing.
OK. okay. I mean, myself, the reason why I'd ask that, because I don't need it. What do I need it for?
And so do you think we should just take it away from those people who are on it? Just dump them and let them fend for themselves? Or how should we deal with that?
That's all I think that they should do away with it. But I'm sure everybody, their first reaction is just going to be, they're going to be angry.
But that's okay. I had an interview with an organization, national organization of women who are on welfare, and they are fighting to stay on it. They said that this is an attack on women. It's unfair that we don't want to pay for their children, and they should be able to be on there and have as many kids as they want, and we should not tell them how to live. They should be able to have sex with who they want. They're out there. They're fighting back to stay on welfare. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. I told that lady, I can't understand your mind. Yeah. It's a lot of them, black and white, young and old, who are fighting to stay on welfare. And that's what happens when you take care of somebody, when you give them something. And when you don't give it to them, they get mad and want to cut your throat about it.
I'm tired of Massa getting money from him every month. I'm tired of paying it. These people, they have a completely different mindset. First of all, they're not getting enough to live on. They got to lie to get it. I haven't met a family that honestly deserves it or needs it.
Most of them are like no good moms, huh?
It's the big rape. Yeah. It's the second rape of a woman to go on welfare, being degraded like that. And it's a terrible thing.
Yes, Martin.
And not only that, but I just heard on Kogo Radio coming out of San Diego, they're talking about the huge bureaucracy.
Sit back a little bit more.
Yes, sir. They're talking about the huge bureaucracy that has grown up around welfare. And they said that somewhere there's an expert who has been working in welfare for a long time. She turned in a little bit of the fraud that she saw, and she got demoted for it. And she said that somewhere around 75% to 80% of all the money that goes into welfare ends up in somebody else's pocket other than who it was intended for. Mm. That's 75% to 80% of all the money intended for them goes, like, for fraud. The welfare people, the administrators, are in cahoots, either directly embezzling the money or working with the welfare recipients to drain the system off. And they have, like, in San Diego County alone, 800 welfare givers or bureaucrats giving out. Each one's responsible for $1.1 million worth of welfare. And they got 800 in San Diego alone.
Have anybody here ever been on welfare? On this panel here?
No.
None of you guys?
No.
Come on.
You know,
I know one out of every black. One, two,
three.
One out of every five. One, two, three, four, five. I've been on welfare.
Well, you know what? You know what happens? It's like, you talk about a father figure, and what's happened in what I see in the black community is that the father figure in the black community is a white man, and his name is Uncle Sam. And he's replaced the father.
Yeah,
you know, he's the breadwinner now.
And it's our fault, though. You know, like, it's that should not happen. But because we are so weak and unwilling to take care of our family so easily, to turn them over to someone else, that's why they're able to come in and do it. We allow it to happen.
Yeah.
The men allow it to happen.
Yeah,
that's why they're
he's filling. Uncle Sam fills the void.
Yeah,
fills the vacuum that. That is there.
Yeah, I want to ask Chris something about Berkeley. You know, Chris, as I said earlier, is going to be graduating this summer, and I've gone through the last 4 or 5 years with him at Berkeley. Many times you've called me crying and talking about they're about to run him out of there, and tell us about your experience there, especially being a black conservative.
I think just. For some reason, I think the most difficult thing about being at Berkeley is just that. It's just that my values and how I've been raised don't agree with most of the people I've met there. I've been told before that Berkeley's a really radical place, but I really didn't have a good conception of that until I got there. It's a dirty place. You have a lot of young people my age, 20, standing on the street begging for money and. You know, just basically doing nothing except wasting their lives. And then even on the campus itself, it seemed like it's embedded throughout the curriculum, you know, all over the universe is this, I guess, politics of hatred. You know, people are taught to hate America for what it stands for. You have a lot of people up there who are trying to rewrite history, you know, in terms of how the country was formed and what a lot of people did in order to contribute to the country in a positive light. You have a lot of people who buy into that. And, you know, basically, if you decide to take a stand against that, then you're X'd automatically. I mean, I can remember countless nights when I first got to Berkeley when I would be the main target of an argument about affirmative action, for example. You know, five people be in the room yelling and screaming at me. And, you know, I wasn't calling them dumb. I wasn't calling anybody stupid or insulting anybody in any way, but I just had an opinion which went against the norm. It went against what everyone had been raised to believe. And
tell us about how they, when you first went there, they tried to teach you to accept homosexuality and tolerance and all that.
Well, they still even do it now. But I've been involved in just various programs, like, you know, in the dorms and whatnot. And a part of, like, the job I would have to do in being in the dorms, a part of the curriculum which I had to learn to accept people from various lifestyles, and that, you know, it's a beautiful lifestyle, that it's okay. And that it's basically everyone's own choice. A lot of times I just had to more or less sit and grin and bear it, but it's something I really just, you know, care not to be a part of really that much anymore.
You know, we have, yes, real quick.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I went to UCLA and I went, there was a women's studies, and part of that was one lecture was going to be inviting lesbians to come and talk to us so we can understand that. And then also at UCLA, they don't allow co-ed fraternities or sororities, you know, because of the sex thing, but they do allow lesbian and gay sorority and fraternities.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder America's going to hell in a handbasket. Real fast.
Sodom and Gomorrah, huh?
Yeah. You know, I want to say in winding up that these last 5 years have been a reward, very rewarding for me. And a lot of good things are still happening in my life. And it's not that I'm so smart. I have to say that again. The way I came to it is that one day, you know, I had gone through the whole trip of praying in other tongues and reading the Bible and just doing everything I could, you know, whatever, to try to find myself. One day I was sitting and I wasn't asking anything of God, and all of a sudden I realized what my problems were, and I was separated from my emotions, and I began to see both worlds. And from that day forward, I've not been the same. And I appreciate everybody that's in my life right now. I appreciate all you guys. Charles, he's been there since day one. Isn't that something? Day one, and he's still there. And
like that Ever-Ready battery.
Yeah. And I want you know, many of you guys have been very honest with me about myself, and I appreciate that. And I look forward to whatever God has for us from this day forward. And I really love you guys and appreciate it. And I want to say thank you very much. Goodbye.
Can find